You're listening to the Prison Poetry Workshop podcast. I'm Ren Smith. Here we present readings, commentary, recordings, and stories about the little-known and even less understood literary tradition of prison poetry. You can never tell how life is going to turn out. When Randall Horton arrived in Washington, D.C. from Birmingham, Alabama in the 1970s, his future looked bright. He'd come from a family of middle-class educators and was a good student and athlete. He'd had his pick of colleges.
I got a scholarship to Alabama A&M to play football. And, you know, I had some local scholarships, but I wanted to go leave home so bad. That's kind of turned those down. Like, I'm not staying around here. I want to go to D.C.
He enrolled at historically black Howard University. He studied there for 4.5 years before getting caught up in the drug plagues of the 1980s and dropping out. Drugs consumed his life for more than a decade.
1997, I found myself in Montgomery County Detention Center facing some charges on burglary and theft by possession. After having served 18 months in Fairfax County, you know, pretty much the same charges.
Having left higher learning behind years before, Horton hadn't sat down to write for a long time.
So, you know, for me, it's like, how can I save time? So I go to the Jail Addiction Service Program. I try to bear it out.
Prison changed that.
Funny thing happened. You have to, so when you go to that program, you have to do things, you know, and so one of them was you had to write.
It was in group therapy sessions that Horton began to receive compliments on his writing. Pretty soon, he was seeking out authors he might emulate.
Yeah, there's an article in the Washington Post about E. Ethelbert Miller, poet at Howard University. So I read it, you know, I had gone to Howard, and I didn't even know him while I was there, you know, and that's how terrible I was.
The article offered that Miller had written a memoir, so Randall read his book. Later, he wrote Miller a letter, telling him of how he dreamed of becoming a writer himself.
And that sort of started a conversation between us in terms of, I mean, just the idea of someone that was writing, to have that connection meant a whole lot to me. And, you know, I was sending my earlier poems and things like that, and I know he had to be laughing, but, you know, he was always gracious and always encouraging. So that began my journey.
Soon he was writing poetry for guys on the inside as well, especially for girlfriends back home.
It was this guy named Sebastian, and he was, you know, stressing on his girl, hadn't written him back in, you know, a few months. And he knew I was writing all the time. He's like, man, will you write my girl a letter? Because he was kind of illiterate. So I sat down one day and talked to him and said, tell me, you know, about your girlfriend. So I got all these characteristics. And so I created this letter, and then she wrote him back, you know. So that started, you know, in my career.
When it came time for Horton to attend a hearing about the possibility of joining a work release program, some of his writing teachers showed up. So did his father, who'd come all the way from Birmingham, Alabama.
I never forget what the prosecutor said in terms of when we were asking for a modification of sentence. He was like, Judge, Mr. Horton has had 38 years to get his life together. He's failed to do so. So we don't see why he should get a second chance or opportunity to do anything but serve his time.
Horton was feeling frustrated and powerless. He knew he'd changed, but he was worried he'd never have a chance to prove it.
And I'm like, they're talking about me, you know what I mean? It's like, it's interesting when you're like, you know, you're the third person in the room and everybody's having this conversation about who you are or who they think you are. Man, it was real interesting. I mean, to them, I just wasn't anything. I was just lowest, you know, the scum of the earth, like the lowest subhuman that there was. And I'm like, wow, I mean, is that really me?
Randall's father, Clarence, says he wasn't feeling very optimistic about his son's chances.
When he first came in, it looked like he was on his way to jail. No, it was very somber, and he got serious, and it really turned into something that was, I don't think was expected by the judge nor the people at the trial.
But Randall says his father saved the day.
He was just, he broke down. He was just like, man, you know, my son is a life worth saving. You know, you got to believe in him because he's not a bad kid. He's made some bad decisions, but he knows the difference between right and wrong. We raised him right. You give him another chance, I believe in him.
I think I was, explaining to her that I thought it was worth saving him because I thought he would make him a good citizen.
And it's one of the most powerful moments in the courtroom. Like, everybody was crying, man. You know, my lawyer was crying.
When the judge approved him for work release, Randall was stunned. So were others.
When I was going back to the holding cell, the bailiff, who'd been with the judge for like 30 years, he was like, man, you got a miracle today. He's like, I've been with that judge for a long time, and she don't give nobody favors. You said, consider yourself lucky today. I've never seen anything like it.
While he was serving out his work release in North Carolina, Horton discovered slam poetry, where performers compete to see who can recite the best spoken word poem.
I would look on the internet when I was in North Carolina and look up slam and see all these people performing, and I was like, wow, I just want to go do that, you know?
So when he got back to D.C.?
So that was one of the first things I did. I began to go and slam at Teaism and, and sort of do that. And I remember the first time I got up to do a poem, this young poet named Ebony Golden. She was getting her MFA in America, and she sort of judged me, and she gave me a 10 on my little poem, right? And I was like, oh, okay. And so she came up after when she said, I really think that you have a gift for craft.
Ebony Golden knew what she was talking about. Since then, Randall has published 4 books. He currently teaches poetry at New Haven University in Connecticut. We'll leave off with one of his poems, one that recalls how tough his journey was at times.
You know, I just was dissatisfied with the world. So I just went into the state of homelessness. And, in a weird way in the beginning, it was sort of like this adventure. You know, I don't know if that makes any sense. And then it became this thing to sort of like not let it eat me alive. And so I can, I'm going to handle this. So it literally became one day at a time. How do I handle this?
Part of living from day to day was the hunt for food. So Randall frequented a place in D.C. that provided free breakfast.
It was a church, and they used to, you could go there, and if you were homeless, you could go there and eat breakfast in the morning. They had good breakfast. So, you know, they had pancakes and scrambled eggs. That's like the bonanza, you know. And so, but in order to get it, you have to listen to this whole sermon by this guy. And so it's like a, interesting thing. Like, you got to go get this religion before you can get the food.
Years later, he memorialized the experience.
It's called Reverend Ezell Show Can Preach. From the pulpit of the United Church of Christ, sporting white pinstripes and two-tone shoes, the color paper money and communion wine, Reverend Ezell delivers Saturday morning sermon before the homeless eat pancake and eggs. He is one half James Brown, the other little Richard, the way his feet answers the organ's call. For an hour he holds his hodges and preaches, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not into thine own understanding. When he finishes spreading gospel, he takes out a pearl bone silk handkerchief and wipes his brow sweat. Careful to quick flash the pinky diamond blinding everybody in the first pew. Satisfied his good deed for the day is good, he exits the back door into a stoplight red Cadillac with donut white walls. Before he notices, the CD player is gone, stolen. I bend the corner to Crown's Pawn Shop, hoping Rev understands it is better to give than to receive.
Something you got, baby. Make me work all day.
That was poet Randall Horton.
Something you got.
I'm Ren Smith. We'll be back next week with more prison poetry. To find out how you can lend your voice To our poetry archive, go to prisonpoetryworkshop.org.